TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friends, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is tweeting from the Illegal Curve Twitter account, at Illegal Curve, and producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. It's odd. It's so used to it being a game day, Winnipeg Jets game day. Yeah. It's the first time in a while that there is no game. It's obviously the All-Star break. Tonight's the skills competition, which I actually enjoy far more than the All-Star game itself. Yeah, not that true. I enjoy either, really, that, at all. But
well, Drew, what you've been saying all year is that if you could see anything, you know, on TV this year, you want to see Rafael Diaz compete in the fastest skater competition.
Yes, true. Yes.
You've said that, and then... He gets named to the rookie team, and he's put in the fastest skater competition.
It's like my dream came true.
It's your dream coming true.
As I tweeted, it's not an All-Star weekend without Rafael Diaz being there.
I know. I really enjoyed the fantasy draft, too.
Didn't you PVR it so you could watch it in slow motion?
Yeah.
As if the...
Not...
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, you won't if you're tuning in to hear a lot of all-star game coverage.
You're turning into the wrong place.
Yeah, you're turning to the wrong place, I'm afraid. We are going to be joined by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen coming up in about half an hour. We're just going to touch base with him about, you know, this in the area, the scene in Ottawa and all that good stuff.
The ice storm,
bad weather in Ottawa, but we'll talk to him. Our man Gary Lawless is there. We'll hear from Gary before the show's up. Also joining us coming up in about an hour, Alex Steen from the St. Louis Blues is going to be joining us.
About that.
Yeah. In support of the Amadeus Steen Foundation, of course, he's going to be—he'll be joining us. And then coming up at 2:15 this afternoon, Bobby Holík, HolikOnHockey.com. You know Bobby Holík, multiple Stanley Cup winner, multiple time All Star, one of the sort of the
former Atlanta Thrasher,
captain of the Atlanta Thrashers, exactly. Bobby Holik's going to be joining us coming up at 2:15 this afternoon.
The $9 million man.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thanks to Glenn Sather. And Mike Gillis, who is actually his agent, so I'm interested to talk to him about Mike Gillis today, because Vancouver now is the general manager, and Bobby with the experience working with Mike. He has always been, Ezzy, you follow the Devils as closely as anybody over the past 15 years. Bobby Holík, always a candid interview.
Yeah.
Always willing to give his opinion, and that's why...
We reached out to him, especially if you go to his website, HolikOnHockey.com. He talks about the game as it is currently, and he doesn't shy away. Nope. There's no sacred cows that he hasn't been corrupted yet to really give a statement without saying anything. He's honest and he speaks honestly, so it's a good place to check out. And we're excited to welcome Bobby Holík. Best way to get a hold of us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. If you want to send us an email, info@illegalcurve.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and of course the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Let's get started with an article written by Richard Pollock. It was a column on illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus will tweet it out right now if you haven't yet seen the column. It's about evaluating Evander Kane's worth. Evander Kane comes up as a restricted free agent this offseason.
Yep.
A restricted free agent without salary arbitration rights.
That's the key.
That's the key, which was in a similar scenario to what Zach Bogosian was in this past offseason.
Drew Doughty, Luke Shen.
Yes.
Exactly. Yep. So really what you have here is you have a player who is an RFA and is eligible to receive offer sheets.
Yes.
Which an offer sheet has not been given in the NHL since Dustin Penner.
The last one was Chalmerson.
Chalmerson, that's right.
That was after Penner.
Yeah, San Jose gave one to Chalmerson of Chicago.
That
back
was actually,
then.
Yeah, and shoveled off as a rookie in Chicago.
Chicago
right.
matched.
That's right.
Chicago matched. We should be clear that Chicago matched Chalmerson's, whereas Edmonton, Anaheim did not.
Yeah. The Dustin Penner, exactly, which in hindsight proved to be a poor offer sheet. But Evander Kane is eligible to be given an offer sheet by another franchise. The Jets would then have the right to match or accept draft picks as compensation. We don't expect that to really come into fruition. It's rare in the NHL that comes into fruition. But what we wanted to do, and what Richard wanted to do specifically in the article, is really try and narrow down a price point that Evander Kane is going to be worth come this offseason. So why don't we get started delving into that story, Richie, and why don't you start by sort of going through your methodology and how you came up with what Evander Kane you think is going to be worth for his next contract.
You know, Drew, he's an interesting player, and I think maybe we should start off with describing the talent as it is. And you know, we have to get into the, who he compares to statistically and maybe style-wise as well. But I think we can, you know, I think people can agree that Evander Kane is a very talented young player. You know, he has his drawbacks, and he's not the best passer, and he maybe doesn't use his teammates as well. But you can't really argue about his speed, about his shot, about his strength, and about his ability to compete at such a young age. So I think that the people like to talk about sometimes what he can't do, but let's talk about what he can do, especially in his third NHL season coming into the league at 18 years old.
Right. He's 20 years old now.
Yeah.
With, I think we can agree without going into too much debate that if he's not the best Winnipeg Jet right now, he's probably the second best Winnipeg Jet right now. And he's the number one scoring threat on the team.
Yes, exactly.
So
nothing harder to do in the National Hockey League than score goals.
That's right. You can develop, it's very difficult to develop a guy who has the skill set to be a 40-goal scorer, which he does have the potential to be.
And in his first two seasons, as a youngster, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit about the opportunity he received in those first two seasons for two different coaches.
Right.
John Anderson being one, Craig Ramsey being the other.
This is his third coach in 3 years now.
Yep. Right. So take that into account as well. And you'll see in the roles that they had a little bit of a change, but he scored 14 goals his first season, in limited opportunity, and we'll talk about the opportunity in a little bit, and 19 goals in his second season. Those are impressive totals. I mean, people like to say, not 20 goals. Well, think about it. Coming in the league as an 18-year-old on a poor team and as a 19-year-old on a poor team.
Go back and look at Joe Thornton's numbers when he was 18 or 19. He didn't exactly put up 80 points in his first couple of years.
I want to interject real quick here. If you're expecting us to really delve deep into his character, you're not going to get that right here. As far as we're concerned, everything that's been said about him is speculation and rumor and innuendo, and we're not really going to factor that too much into this discussion. This is going to be a conversation about his on-ice performance and his on-ice skill set.
People have to realize it's what his next contract will be. Now, it might not be with the Jets. He may be traded. Like any other player could be traded. So it might not be with the Jets, but his contract to me will be likely the same or close to the same within the same proximity regardless of where he signs it.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, granted somebody could lose their mind and offer him a ridiculous contract, but
now
we're going to pretend that's not going to happen.
But even so, Drew, I don't see there being any situation except for the 4 first round pick threshold where somebody with the Jets wouldn't match.
Agreed.
Okay, because what happens is the system in their RFA system is they make it cost prohibitive, right? So you have to pay so much for a guy. So what you have to do is what you have to do, it's inflationary. And Cheveldale said that on our show in the summer. You have to overpay so the team that has him doesn't want to pay that price and they give him up for the draft picks. So to overpay, essentially, you need to get into based on the numbers they came up with, you need to basically overpay significantly into the point where 4 first-round draft picks would be the compensation. And at that point, you have to say that the Jets certainly would take that into consideration.
Sure.
Now, I don't see that happening.
If somebody comes in with a 4-year, $28 million offer for Evander Kane, the Jets would have to strongly consider if the 4 first-round picks are more valuable.
And also, you have to consider, before we get into further, you have to consider who it comes from. Like, if it comes from a Detroit, you maybe have to match, because Detroit's probably going to finish top 2 every year.
And they're going to be in your conference.
Also true.
And
good
Richie,
point. And that's a big thing for GMs, yes.
Yeah, that is. And that's why for everyone out there who is going to be listening to us and Richie specifically go over Evander Kane's market value, and then later on in the show when we go over our kind of guys on the Jets who might be trade deadline bait, you never want to trade a guy in your division especially or your conference, because he's going to come back to beat you. And that's why a general manager tries to avoid that at all costs.
Well, you never want...
I don't like that.
I don't like that thinking
either. I don't like that
either.
Rationality, but
it's old school thinking.
But I agree it's present. I mean, that that exists.
General managers are afraid that if they make a trade and the guy comes into your arena 6 times a year or you play that guy 6 times a year and he puts up 2 or 3 goals every game, it's going to look bad on him for what he acquired.
Okay, so a little bit of flaws in the reasoning, but let's talk
about comparables.
I quickly just want to tell you what the compensation is for RFA so we're aware. Now, last year it was about... Now, the numbers get moved around a bit based on the average salary, but it was about, just over $1 million or below was no compensation, okay?
Okay.
Now you have to...
Just get into the high figure.
Right. So the high figures last time was between just over $3 million and just under $5 million was a first and a third round choice. Over about $4.7 million, between $4.7 million and $6.2 million was a first, second, and third round choice.
So if somebody came in with an RFA contract sheet to Evander Kane between $4.7 million and $6.2 million per season, it would cost them a first rounder, a second rounder, and a third rounder.
you likely probably match.
Right.
All right. Now, the second one, next one would be 6.2 and 7.8 would be two first-round choices, one second, one third-round choice. Then you maybe consider a little more, depending on the team and what's going on. Over 7.8 last year was four first-rounders. At that point, you're not paying them that much, so you're probably getting rid of them. So,
and if any general manager's making that offer, they might be insane.
And that's the point. So now let's get into...
Comparables. Let's talk about comparables. He's in his third year. He's 20 years old. Who jumped out to your mind as being the a comparable for Evander Kane?
If you're negotiating and you're Craig Oster, who is the agent for Evander Kane, works at Newport Sports, that's Don Meehan's agency in Ontario. Okay.
Yeah.
And he actually went to U of M for business school, and then he went to University of Western Ontario, the Western University. Now that whole controversy.
Right.
He went there for law school, and so now he is his agent. Right. If you're gonna look at benchmarks, so you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, and you look at John Tavares. Okay. John Tavares drafted the same year as Kane,
first overall.
Different in style, but John Tavares is a great player. Yeah. I mean, he plays in any other market, he gets way more attention than he currently has. John Tavares has 168 points in 209 games, okay?
Over the first 3 years of his contract.
Yes. Kane, on the other hand, has 100 points in 185 games. All right, so Tavares' points per game is already, 0.8 points per game over a three-year career. His numbers have risen significantly each year.
John Tavares is at 0.8 points per game. Evander Kane at 0.54 points per game.
But why don't we look at, more importantly, how he's risen over the past 3 years?
Okay, that's right. John Tavares, start his rookie year, 54 points. His second year, 67 points. So far this year, 49 points in 48 games. So he's over a point a game this year.
Right.
For a bad team.
For a bad team.
For a
and
bad
he's
team.
He's playing, that guy, so it's, that line of Tavares, Parenteau, and Molson is playing against the other team's best defenseman every
night. That's right.
Kane is not always doing that.
Which is one of the statistics you reference in the article, available on illegalcurve.com and through our Twitter page, at illegalcurve. In the 3 years that John Tavares has been a New York Islander, the first year, the quality of his competition was sixth overall.
Yeah, on his team.
On his team. In this second year, it was fifth overall on his team, and this year it's up to third overall on his team.
So it's if you look at his numbers,
he's playing against tough competition year by year.
Exactly. If you look at Tavares' numbers every year, and you look at all the categories I put there, Drew.
Yeah.
Every year, his numbers get better in every category,
which is what you'd expect.
Right.
Which is a good sign for the New York Islanders.
And Richie Evander Kane, who was taken in the same draft,
fourth overall, three
spots after Tavares. Also, his numbers have gone up, and he's played on the same team. But the reason why you included that but didn't compare him is to show that Tavares is an elite player, whereas Kane is just below an elite player.
Exactly. So what Tavares does is he sets the ceiling for negotiations. His contract is $5.5 million per year. It's in the next, I think, I believe it's in the next page. $5.5 million per year, I think, for the next 5 years. Okay? So... If you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, you're saying, well, there's no way that Evander Kane can ask for $5.5 million per year. He's not John Tavares.
And the numbers back that up.
The numbers back that up.
Yeah.
So you probably say he's not even $5 million player. Okay? I mean, you got to be close to Tavares. Tavares is right now.
Yep.
He's in a young up-and-coming star. No GM in the league wouldn't do the Tavares for Kane trade.
And another thing that we got to mention, too, is that Evander Kane, at 20 years old, is just it's full of potential. Every time you hear his name, you hear, 3-4 years from now, the guy's going to be an 80-point player. Well, John Tavares, this year, is an 80-point player at the same age.
That's right.
So potential is not a really good negotiation tactic.
Now, interestingly... Okay. Now, Kane's numbers have risen as well, not as significantly. But his ice time, to me, is a little bit more peculiar. I mean, he's playing the exact same amount of power play time as he was last year. He's playing less on the PK. Overall, his ice time's down.
From last year.
Yeah.
Let's look at that. This year, he's playing a next 24 seconds more of even strength ice time compared to last year. But,
Which
is not a lot.
He's averaging 15 minutes and 6 seconds a game.
But he's also playing 47 seconds less on penalty kill this year. So he is playing less ice time than last year. This year, his points... I mean, first year, Evander Kane had 26 points in 66 games.
Yep.
Last year, 43 points in 73 games. And this year, so through 46 games that he's played, he's at 31 points.
Right. Now, he has almost the amount of goals he did last year and...
He'll beat last
27 less games. Right?
I mean, he's injured right now. We should mention that, but he should beat next year's
total. Yes, concussion comes back in concussion. He shatters that number. I think.
Yep.
Now, I think what we need to do though is you look at that comparable. Now, John Tavares, the purpose of including him within the piece is that he is a top end.
He's the ceiling, like you said. When you're looking at a value, and this is how, for the record, this is how general managers go about their logic, especially if there's no salary arbitration right now.
Right.
But when he would be eligible for
salary
arbitration.
Which is after 4 years of accrued time, would be after next season.
That's right. If you ever go to a salary arbitration case, what you do is the general manager comes with an example.
Those are really open to the public.
It's interestingly enough, Bobby Holik had one of the worst experiences in salary arbitration.
Lou Lamoriello.
And it was written about by Bruce Daubig
in the book
Money Players. So we're going to ask Bobby about the experience of salary arbitration.
Exactly. So, you go there and the GM who's negotiating comes with one example, generally lower, and the agent comes with another example, generally higher.
An arbitrator decides which one he likes.
They're not pulling any punches.
No, well, they're negotiating for every dollar. Exactly. Craig Oster is going to come to Kevin Cheveldayoff in the offseason, and he's going to come with a comparable for Evander Kane at the dollar amount that he thinks Evander Kane is worth.
And I wanted to throw this in, too, because I was reading Richie's article before he posted it, and we were at a local restaurant, and we were talking about this, and Richie actually made the good point that this article, and it's a very good article, I recommend everyone read it, it's two parts, it's actually written from the perspective of both an agent and a general manager, and that's why it comes to a very equitable number at the end.
So we've established that John Tavares and this contract is the ceiling for Evander Kane that he's going to come in for negotiations with. Yep. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the floor and so forth, and where we can really see Evander Kane slotting in for his RFA contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. We just decided and evaluated Evander Kane's ceiling as being at John Tavares in the contract that he signed. Now let's continue talking about Evander Kane's comparables and the floor.
Yeah. So, Drew, there's three comparables I picked out that I thought would be relevant in this situation.
Okay.
Evander Kane's a kind of an up-and-down winger, okay? Shoot-first kind of guy.
A north-south winger,
north-south winger.
Yeah.
Reminds me, actually, the most of James Neal.
Of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, formerly of the Dallas Stars.
Right.
In that, James Neal's more of an up-and-down winger. He's a shoot-first guy. Obviously, he's benefiting now playing with Evgeny Malkin, but playing with some playmakers in Dallas for his first couple seasons. Him and Phil Kessel, to me, seem like the most applicable comparison. Phil Kessel is even a more applicable comparison. Phil Kessel started in the National Hockey League at 18 years old.
Right.
And Phil Kessel, they're not as big, and he's not as big and strong as Kane, but he's a shoot-first player with good speed.
And also had a so-so first year, and then had the good second year,
yeah,
and then went to Toronto.
Yeah. And, I think he, to me, serves as a nice comparison. But and the other person, player I tossed in here was Logan Couture. A great skater. I think a better player than Evander Kane. I think he's always playing center. I wanted to include him in the analysis just for a reference point, but I didn't think he was as applicable. Now, let me just qualify one thing, okay?
Okay.
When you're comparing guys, a guy like Phil Kessel came into the league at 18 years old. James Neal came into the league at 19 years old. He came into the league after playing a year
Then he jumped around in the AHL.
Right. So he had a year of seasoning, and so did Logan Couture at Worcester. So when you have to take the player's age into account when, their first season was. So Evander Kane comes into the league at 18 years old, right?
Yeah.
And Logan Couture comes in, and James Neal comes in at 19 or 20. They come in a year later.
If they come a significant year. I mean,
exactly.
You can't compare
their first years to each other, with respect to Kane and Neal, because it's apples and oranges.
Well, when you're a 20-year-old, you're a lot more developed as a player than you are when you're just an 18-year-old.
So what we did is, put together the point totals for Neal and Couture and Kessel over their first three seasons and ice time, and there's a bunch of other stats in there as well.
Right.
Do you want to, Drew, I think the key point here is when you look at the players and their ice time and how they succeeded, right? You look at Phil Kessel, he comes into a pretty good team, he plays 11 minutes of even strength the first year, 13 minutes the second year, and 16 minutes the third year, right?
Yeah.
You have Kane, you have 12 minutes, 14, 15, you have about the same. He's playing about the same even strength minutes, right? And that's how does a coach trust him? And Kessel's playing about 2 minutes a game on the power play. What's Kane playing?
Two minutes and 18 seconds per game on the power play.
Yeah, since his first year. So there's comparables in the way that they were used.
Right.
And then the opportunity that they saw. Now, Phil Kessel rose up significantly from 1 year to the next year to the next year, right? Phil Kessel's first season, he put up 29 points.
That's right.
It was his third year. I misspoke. It was actually his third year that he put up.
He had 37 points in his second year.
Yeah.
Kane, I believe, at 43.
That's right.
right? And what did Kane have his first year? 31?
Kane had 26 in his first year.
And so, what did Keslev? 29.
29. So very comparable. Certainly a lot of comparison. It seems like Kane exceeded Kessel in the second year.
Now, of course, his third year
is when Phil Kessel made the big jump.
60 points, 36 goals in 70 games.
That's right.
Okay.
Which is just terrific numbers, especially right. for you know, a 20-year-old
and
guy.
And at one point, Kane was on pace for 40 goals and 80 points, and then he's had a bit of a slump here.
And Kane's point per game over the course of his first three seasons, you know, two and a half, have been 0.54, right? Points per game. Kessel over three seasons was 0.57.
Right.
So I think they're pretty comparable that way. James Neal is a different situation that he scored about 24 goals, 27 goals, 22 goals over his first 3 years.
But he also, and again, like you said, he came in as a more mature, ready to step into a more significant role.
And what happens is, so Kessel and Tavares signed big deals after their entry-level contracts.
Okay? That's right.
Now, Couture and Neal did not. They signed two-year deals.
Two-year deals for Neal. Neal signed a two-year deal with a cap hit of 2.875.
Yes.
And Couture signed a two-year deal with a cap hit of 2.875. Exactly the same.
Identical. Now, the structure of the contracts is different.
Yeah. Neal gets only 2.25 in the first year and 3.5 in the second.
Now,
so there's a big cash difference, but for a cap hit, it's exactly the same cap hit.
If you're an agent, the agent for Couture's deals higher. Yeah, the agent for Neal does a better job, because what happens is in the final year of their two-year deals, James Neal is at $3.5 million, Couture's at $3 million.
If James Neal turns a 40-goal performance in after that three point five million dollar, that's the base that he's going to start.
But if you qualify him, you have to qualify him at 100%.
Right.
So minimum he can make is 3.5.
Right.
Right, and
in a terrible year.
And the other thing to mention,
so Couture starts at $500,000 a deficit.
Right.
And James Neal right now at 28 or 29 is looking pretty good for a 40-goal season. And for these two contracts, you could make a very strong argument that both these guys are huge bargains.
Right now they are.
Couture's going to add 80 points.
And they'll get more expensive on their next contract. That's why they signed just a shorter contract. The agent says, you sign a short contract, exceed the contract, and you're going to get a big raise in the second.
Let's
the next
talk about
contract.
The leverage they have in their contract negotiations. They don't have much leverage. Evander Kane has no leverage this summer. He can either, as I mentioned, sit out.
A man
not
without
play.
A hand is not a man.
That's right. He can sit out, as he can demand a trade, or he can sign a contract. There's no arbitration.
Right.
I mean, what's he going to do? He can sign a contract. He can sign a contract or an offer sheet.
It's the same thing we saw with Zach Bogosian this offseason. This is exactly the same. At push comes to shove, he takes the deal that was on the table because there's no other deal available to him.
And I don't see this management group in Winnipeg. I mean, you guys can cut in here if you don't agree. I don't see them signing one of these 10-year deals.
No.
I don't see them
from
right
what now. We've seen, and Elliot Friedman wrote about this, and Eric, actually, by the way, I'd like to cut in here, too, because I know that we all are huge fans of Eric Duhatchik, and he's a friend of the show, and we've met him before, and he's been on the show before, wrote a good article in the Globe and Mail yesterday called, I believe it was called something along the lines of The Crazy Business of Hockey.
That's right.
And all of these contracts that have been signed. You can make a strong argument, Richie, right now, that the two contracts that were signed by the Philadelphia Flyers to Mike Richards and Jeff Carter are not looking very good right now because of the terms and the amount of money that they're getting.
And
those are two examples
If you listen to our show, we rip long-term contracts from three years ago.
Yeah.
There's not
even Ovechkin one we ripped. I went on about that, Ezzy, and I said this. What happens if he gets injured? Now, we didn't know he was going to become seemingly disinterested in becoming a better player.
Right. He's happy with his skill set.
I'd have to agree. I mean, from what we know about True North, Andrew Ladd was the first player to be signed back in July to a 5-year deal.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the longest contract
but
offered in a while.
But you expect Kane to sign now going into this offseason, would you expect him to sign a James Neal, Logan Couture 2-year in length contract, or would you see him signing a longer contract that takes over goes into a UFA year?
It takes
two
to tango.
Right.
I don't see his agent, unless he gets a sweet offer, signing away his UFA year. So when I did the projections for the contracts, I did a 1-year deal, I did a 2-year deal, I did a 3-year deal, and I did a 4-year deal. In the 4 years, he came into the league as an 18-year-old. So he'll have played 3 seasons by this summer, meaning a 4-year deal gets him 7 accrued seasons, thereby making him an unrestricted free agent.
That's
now, some people get confused. They say you become UFA at this 26, 27. It's 7 years old.
Seven years in the NHL. It doesn't matter how old you actually are. It's
seven years. Okay.
So, I mean, he could be a 25-year-old free agent.
That's exactly what that's,
which is what it'd be after 7 years. He will be a UFA at that
generally,
point.
Generally, I mean, unless you're getting these sweet long-term deals,
So if the Jets sign him to a 2-year deal,
yeah.
they signed him to a two-year deal like they did Neal or Couture, or as Pittsburgh did Neal, yes. and San Jose did Couture. After those 2 years, he's still an RFA, but he's an arbitration-eligible RFA.
Right. That's exactly right.
So at that point in time, he has a little bit more leverage.
A lot more leverage.
He has somebody who will...
A team can take a player to arbitration once in his career. A player can opt for arbitration as much as he wishes.
Right. Exactly. So,
and a team can only opt for arbitration twice in one calendar year. For their whole roster.
For their whole roster. So it's you got to be careful, but when you want it, you never really want to go to arbitration with somebody. It's not a fun game. It's not a very fun game, exactly. So
hurt feelings. I mean, we're talking about Holík. That was what happened with Bobby Holík was that I think as the story goes, and we can ask Bruce Dagbeck when we have him on again. This is a book about 10 years old, but a very good book.
Yeah.
What happened there was they basically told him, and as you'll know, is that they played on the crash line, he played on checking lines. They told him, check, take care of your business, we'll win cups, it's fine. And so he did that. He sacrificed some offense at the expense of he played strong defense at the expense of his offense, and then they came into arbitration. Well, he doesn't score, he doesn't do this, he can't. And so Bobby Holík
held. It was a bit of a sandbagging situation.
It was a bit of sandbagging. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so what you have now is, so what do you see happening?
You got 2 minutes here?
Yeah, we got 2 minutes before we have to get to James Gordon. So what do you see happening with Evander Kane this coming offseason?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, Drew, what I see coming. I mean, there's a possibility he's not in a Jets uniform coming into next season. But the contract he signs, I think you have to take into account the fact that, James Neal made... They have cap hits of 2.875, right?
Yeah.
I think the annual average salary is now the average salary in the NHL is $2.3 million.
Right.
Okay. Thank Mike Hall again for that information. $2.3 million, probably rise again. And the fact that Kane came into the league a little bit younger than Neal and Couture did, I think that Kane on his first 2 years, if he signs a two-year deal, would be at about approximately $3.05 million cap hit, not 2.875.
And his second year would go up a little bit?
Second year would be 3.5, same as Neal's, but his first year would be more than Neal's.
Right.
So you're thinking an average annual hit of a little bit over $3 million if he signs a two-year deal.
Another qualifier. It's complicated. Another qualifier. People are saying, this year he's making 3.1, quote-unquote. He's not.
No.
Because there's bonuses within the contract, and there's a lot of them that you can reach.
His cap hit is 950.
It's 900,000.
900.
So the bonuses might maybe get up to 1.5. I don't know the bonuses.
Don't count against the cap.
But so if you're talking about next year at, say, 2.6, which I have him at, it's actually a raise in salary likely, not a drop in salary.
Right.
Okay?
So you're figuring...
Could there not be bonuses that don't count on that average annual hit?
No. The bonuses will count.
They just count after the fact.
Yeah, but they also, we don't know what the bonuses are.
That's right.
And we don't know what the prices are with the bonuses. Right.
Exactly. So at a two-year deal, we figure a little bit over $3 million a year. Let's go to break. When we come back, we have James Gordon. But after that, we'll go, what happens if Evander Kane signs a longer-term deal than just 2 years? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome to the program the unofficial host of All-Star Weekend in Ottawa. It's James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. James, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
I know, and I had that title. I would ask for some money.
Well, we don't have any to give you, but you can see about the organizers. Eugene Melnick may have a couple shekels kicking around for you.
Yeah, all right. I'll talk to him.
Okay. All-Star Weekend in Ottawa started Thursday night with the All-Star Draft. How's the sort of the general tone in the city? Is there an excitement level? Is it growing still, or did it sort of max out on Thursday with the fantasy draft?
No, it's really great, actually. I mean, as you guys know, winter in Canada can make for some pretty gray cities, and it's kind of just lit the whole thing up here. I mean, everybody's really excited about it. I was just down at the Fan Fair downtown today, and it's packed down there, people lining up to see the Stanley Cup, and just NHL players walking around everywhere downtown. I mean, Scott Hartnell was in there just walking around talking to people. You know, like a fan taking it in with family members and that sort of thing. So it's definitely a different thing and a really great experience for fans. I mean, the All-Star game, I think we all know, for the most part, it's a big deal for the city hosting it, and everyone else is kind of like, meh, when do we get our real games back? But definitely to see it here in the city, it's quite a thing.
Yeah, in Columbus, it's actually a better game than the real games.
James, I want to know...
They needed something to go right there.
James, I want to know, how excited are the fans in Ottawa to see Colin Greening compete in the breakaway competition?
I can't remember if I've seen him in a breakaway yet. It's exciting for him. I think he would have preferred to be on Daniel Alfredson's, side, but
right.
He's the only outsider.
James, as from an Ottawa perspective, quickly, sometimes I guess we don't give enough thought to this as, being based in Winnipeg. You see Zdeno Chara being the all-star captain, and you see Zdeno Chara obviously lifting the cup last year. Is there still a lot of, why did we let him go for nothing kind of, talk in Ottawa? Are people over that now?
No, people aren't over it. Maybe I just don't get it because I'm not from here and I'm a writer, but everybody boos him here for some reason when he comes back. And, the whole way that went down is he really wanted to stay here.
Yeah.
And the team cast its lot with Wade Redden, which obviously turned out to be a huge mistake. And, it wasn't like Chara was saying, I really want to leave. He just wanted fair pay for, being the kind of defenseman who would become a Norris winner and a Stanley Cup champion captain. And I don't think he was out of line with what he was asking for at the time. And, it's just what the team could afford, and they decided to go with Wade Redden for whatever reason. I think the fact that Redden was maybe more, I don't want to say dedicated, but put more time, or was more visible, I guess, as more of a community guy, maybe they decided to go that way. And, maybe the team at the time was putting more value on a puck mover instead of a
perennial Norris Trophy candidate,
or physicality or whatever. And Brian Murray said years later, because he was the coach when that was all going down, or about to become a coach, he said he lobbied hard for them to keep Chara instead. So that was a John Muckler decision, and they aren't shy about painting it that way either, because a lot of fans here are really, really upset that that happened the way it did. Still,
it's an interesting to look back at it. I ended up watching Wade Redden this year, James. I ended up catching him in Hartford for a game, and it's how the mighty have fallen. I was wondering what I'd see from a player like that, and whether he was being kept down there strictly based on the salary. And clearly, the salary is a factor. But I'm not sure if you've seen him play recently, but his play was certainly left a lot to be desired.
Well, it was something that was really noticeable here his last year. I mean, he'd obviously lost a lot of speed, and there was just something, I hate saying the word passion because, I think these players care, most of them. Mm-hmm. But there was just something missing there, like it was just a low energy or something. And which is why, everyone here was completely in shock when the Rangers gave him the term and the money that they did, because it was so obvious to anybody who had watched him for at least, a few games, that he was on a major, major downswing. And, maybe the Rangers thought that he would be in a position to bounce back. But, it was really, I think that contract was viewed with shock around the league, mm-hmm. but especially here, because people were well aware that Wade Redden's best years had passed him by already.
We talk about, how the mighty have fallen. Maybe, obviously, not to the same extent, James, but what has been the reaction with Alexander Ovechkin bailing out?
Well, I mean, people in Ottawa were upset because, and people who, I guess, see the All-Star game with a bit more respect than others do, mm-hmm. were upset that he kind of bailed. But that was kind of the story of the day for a day, and then it's just been so busy here with everything else going on that people haven't really been talking about it much anymore. And you saw, Jamie Benn coming here right after surgery because he wants to take part in it. And there's a lot of players who really embrace the All-Star game and they like coming here. And I can understand it's a long season and some guys want some rest and they want time with their families and whatever. So I don't know. You want it to not look bad. So then you start thinking about, do you mandate these guys to come in the next CBA or whatever, but at the same time, you really want them here sulking around anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what you do in the next CBA is you scrap the All-Star game, if I had my druthers. But anyways, we're joined on the line by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen discussing All-Star weekend in Ottawa.
James, it's awesome that you're on the show, because as far as we're concerned, the Ottawa Senators are one of the best stories of the season. Mm-hmm. Richie was telling anybody that would listen earlier on in the season that, we should look out for Ottawa, and right now they're, they're in a position that they can get a high playoff seeding in the Eastern Conference. And, you got to start, in my opinion, with Jason Spezza. Jason Spezza, and you'll know this very well, he had a ridiculously difficult year last year. The Ottawa Senators did not have a good year on the ice, and Jason Spezza, took a lot of criticism, and he was the subject of trade rumors and his attitude and all this. How good is this right now for Jason Spezza? You know, he's playing really well on the ice, minus the black eye. You know, how good must it feel for Jason Spezza? And do you think now finally everybody's gonna give him a rest, give him a break from all the criticism, because he's always been a good hockey player and he's always said that he wants to play in Ottawa, right?
Right, and I mean he was always kind of the whipping boy here too earlier because. There were some defensive shortcomings, and he makes some iris plays sometimes that turn into turnovers. But I think the fans here have come around to realize, first line passing centers don't grow on trees, and he has made a bit of a commitment to working on his defensive side of the game. And Jason Spezza and the team came to a real crossroads here a couple seasons ago when he got booed in his own rink in the playoffs, and there was a lot of sort of disagreement, I guess, about what was going on in the room because the players didn't like Corey Kluson. And you get, when you talk to Jason Spezza about Corey Kluson in that time, you really read between the lines, and he was not a happy player at all here at that time. And I think one of the biggest turnarounds for him this season is the new coach. I mean, he talks about Paul McLean with glowing terms and about, how he allows them to play, takes the leash off a little bit and lets them play with some creativity and just his willingness to have some back and forth with the players and talk about it. So I think that's probably the biggest part of why he's turned it around and, why he's, still interested in staying here, whereas a couple seasons ago you would have thought he almost wanted to leave.
Well, James, with all due respect to, other coaches in the league, is it even close? I mean, is he not the coach of the year? As far as I'm concerned, it's not even close.
Well, there's a caveat, though. I mean, if they, tank here in the stretch and they don't make the playoffs, obviously that's not going to happen.
Right, sure.
But they did lose a few games here going into the break, but I think you could chalk that up to more fatigue. I mean, I think they played more games than any other team, and they were out on the West Coast and all that. And they've been on the road all month, but I mean, certainly if they hold on and they make the playoffs, and especially if they're in that 5-6 range,
right.
then he has to be one of the front runners. I don't think you can overlook Ken Hitchcock because he went something like 25-3.
That's true. That's true. That team Hitch over. Has done a very good job. You're right.
And, I mean, it's tough to overlook Tortorella, too, because that's a team that squeaked in last year, and it's all kind of pulled together this year, and he knows how to push their buttons. So if it were me, I think those would be my front runners right now. I think it's too early to say one's ahead of the other, but certainly Paul McLean, if things keep going the way they are, then he'll be one of the favorites.
James, going back to Thursday night in the fantasy draft, the national punditocracy decided that the fans in Ottawa, in Gatineau, to be more accurate where it was held, were inappropriate with some of their actions and their booing of the Leafs. Your take on that, did you agree with that, or did you just think, if you're going to open it up to the public, this is what the public's going to do?
Well, I think that's just it. I mean, initially I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of amateur hour, but I mean, they're fans. They love their team. And if you want them in there, then they're not going to sit there and quietly respect, the institution. Like
the institution of the fantasy all-star draft.
I guess. That's my point. I mean, it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be a fan-driven thing. And if they want to boo them, then, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. Although there was one Yahoo who made some comment about Wade Belak or something. And I mean, you're going to get some, goofs in every crowd. But, I mean, for the most part, I don't know. Sometimes I think we think too much about the All-Star game. I think back to when I was a kid. Like, it was exciting. When you're a kid, it's like, oh, look at all these players doing these tricks. Uh-huh. And they're all playing together. And it's exciting. And I don't know. I think we're just becoming a little cynical about the All-Star game because to us it's like, well, this doesn't matter, but I don't know, it's fun when you're a kid.
I think also, James, maybe a factor as well is now the teams are realizing that they could have their own skills comp and have fans actually attend and have there be full buildings, and I guess it's the novelty is worn off a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's
fair enough.
It's for some fans who like it, and for the media, it's whatever, but
it's all about the children.
Well, there you go. Who will think of the children?
Last question, James. I guess we'd be remiss if we don't ask you this. to some, I guess nobody really wants to talk about it too much. But the Tim Thomas controversy obviously has led. If you watch the highlights last night, he spoke about the issue again after saying he probably wasn't going to speak about it. Is the media taking that too far, or did Tim have it coming, or maybe just get your take on that?
Well, I think we'll see whether or not it was a big deal to take it far or not. Based on how he plays and his team plays in the second half, he took what was supposed to be a fun day for him and his teammates, and he made it into a political speech. When really, if anyone who follows me on Twitter knows, I didn't agree with it. And I'm not speaking as a media guy here; it's just as a personal thing. I just use the analogy, like, I have a lot of friends who are conservatives, and that's fine. I disagree with a lot of things they say, but I'm not going to turn down their dinner invitation over it. I mean, he could have gone, he could have shook the president's hand and said, let's put the rhetoric aside for a second, but he chose to make a big stink out of it. And that's up to him. I'm never going to say he doesn't have the right to do it. I'm just going to say, I don't agree with it. So, It is what it is. It'll go, and in my opinion, I think it goes away pretty soon.
Here's hoping it goes away and you can focus on the on-ice stuff more than anything. James, before we let you go, last question. What bar? I lived in Ottawa for a little while, so I know the bar is all too free. Is it Heart and Crown? Has that been the central point for the gathering for this weekend?
I think Heart and Crown was the big fan spot last night. I know a lot of the media went to the Royal Oak, though.
Sure. Okay. I got you loud and clear.
I guess this is an inside conversation. James Gordon.
It's a little bit of it. Exactly. James Gordon from the Ottawa says, and James, people can follow you on Twitter at Sens Reporter. Is that right?
That's right.
There you go. James, thanks very much. We'll see you in Winnipeg coming up in about a month or so.
That's the plan.
There you go.
James, we'll take you to the Palomino Club. It's it's a great little spot here in Winnipeg.
He's from Winnipeg.
I'm from Winnipeg.
Oh, are you?
Where
wow.
The Palomino is.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Jean Sauvé.
Oh, Jean Sauvé. Okay.
There you go, James.
I took French immersion. We can parler français.
Yeah.
I took French at Kelvin. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know you were a Winnipeger. That's impressive. Now I'm going to treat you a lot better.
Yeah, you didn't know that's his whole shtick.
All right.
Yeah,
all right, we're going to.
As he graduated from the Palomino.
Yeah, I graduated from the Palomino exactly. French immersion program. So we'll give you the red carpet treatment up in the MTS Center press box for sure.
All right, perfect. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, James. Take care.
All right.
Take care. James Gordon from
Never
the Ottawa.
I knew that James was from Winnipeg.
I told you that.
You guys have to. Why don't I get the media notes? Richie gets the media notes. Drew, you know what? We're getting a new host.
Yeah.
What did I do? We need
a new host.
You're the only one for us, Drew.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Remus, get in here.
Let's go. Anyways, let's go to break. That was James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Big thank you to James Gordon at Sens Reporter on Twitter for coming on with us. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve.
We had 1,000 fans recently on Illegal Curve.
The website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David is a lifelong Winnipegger who brings an intimate knowledge and tremendous passion for all things Winnipeg to all of his real estate dealings. Call David at 230-6129 for all your real estate needs. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Drew, I have a serious question for you. Let's say I'm in the market for a house, and I enlist David Carr as my realtor. Am I allowed to pay him in Monopoly money?
You don't actually have to pay him anything. As the purchaser...
He doesn't get the joke.
I get the joke. No, I understand
Drew
the joke.
Drew doesn't find me funny.
Yeah. No, I play the straight
We're
man.
We're going to pass go and just like go to jail, Drew. Let's go to the next topic here.
Okay, so we decided that Evander Kane
Richie's the only one that gets me.
On a two-year deal, Evander Kane, we decided, was worth a little bit more than $3 million a year. Let's talk about what he's worth on a three-year contract. Okay. So, I mean, you did break it down.
Okay, now that's where Tavares and Kessel come into play a little bit more, Drew. Now,
because they signed... Tavares and Kessel signed long-term contracts.
Yeah, so Tavares signed a deal that takes them, way past his UFA status, right?
Right.
A couple years past his UFA status. So he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, right?
Yeah.
So his UFA status would actually be after 4. So he signs away 2 UFA years, meaning
right.
What he can get on the open market with no, strings attached.
Which is why the contract escalated up to $6 million per year in actual cash-out payments for those 2 years of UFA years.
Now, but the thing is, because Kessel and Tavares both signed long-term deals into their UFA years,
yeah,
the arbitration issue is irrelevant.
That's
meaning
right.
the amount of the contract every year really doesn't matter.
They sold their arbitration years for a higher annual cap hit.
Exactly.
Or
so what I'm saying
average
is
annual value.
Sometimes the contract will be scaled. So two, three, how I did the Kane contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Kane signs away his UFA years, he doesn't care what his third year is because it's part of a long-term deal. And when he finishes, it's a UFA. So the UFA last year, the last year of the deal can really be $1 million. Because he's a UFA, it doesn't matter. There's nothing to keep him down to a lower price.
That's right.
Okay, so Kessel and Tavares is long term. They took $5.5 and $5.4 million cap hits for the totals of their contracts. So you average that out, $5.45 million.
Sure.
So when you look at Kane signs for $3.05 million for a 2 year deal. If he's signing a 3 or 4 year deal, Drew, you're getting closer to his prime, right? 23, 24 his prime years. So. For his third year of a deal of a hypothetical contract, I have him just under $5 million. Now he's not Kessel, and he's close to Kessel, but he's really probably not there, right? Not there, and he's not Tavares. Okay, so you have him at 4.85. That's taken into account. Salaries are going to increase. Salaries are going to increase a bit. He's going to improve on department performance based upon what he's done so far. Seems like a reasonable figure, but not where they're at. And then the contract ends up at. Fourth year, 5.35. Still a little bit below them, but 4 years down the road, you think the guy probably be a 35, 40 goal scorer. You think he peak, maybe right, maybe not Kessel, but close to it,
mm-hmm.
not getting as much money at the beginning of the contract. Seems like a reasonable number, which brings us to the total value.
Well, so 3 years, okay, total value, yeah.
Would be, well, 3 years, the cap it would be 3.65 per year.
Right, but a total value of the contract a little bit around, which puts it a little bit over $10 million.
Yeah.
Closer to $11 million to be, to be completely accurate.
Yeah, 3.65 times 3.
That's right. So that's with the third year being the actual cash payment in that third year is the highest of the,
that's
of
right.
the 3 years.
So if the contract,
escalating upwards.
The contract ends and he has one more arbitration year, they have to qualify him at $4.85 million.
That's right.
That's the minimum he can get.
That's the minimum he can get because exactly right. The contract ends, team wants to maintain his rights, and they have to qualify him at 100%
that's right.
of the, not the AAV of the contract, but the actual cash
yes.
of the contract
that's
in
right.
that final
that's
year,
right.
which is why an agent wants to structure it that way, as you said.
Exactly right.
Exactly right. So he's, boom, he signs a 3 year contract, little over $11 million. At the end of that 3 years, the Jets still hold his rights
right.
for one more year.
That's right.
And the minimum he can get paid if the Jets want to retain his rights is $4.85 million.
And who was
million.
In that predicament this year? Andrew Ladd.
Andrew
he had one year left. 1 year left of the team retaining his rights, which is why the first year of his deal is actually less than the next.
You
four.
Hear it more in baseball than you do in hockey, but it's becoming more in hockey. The team controlled
yeah.
is sort of the buzzword. He's under control to the team.
And then the point I make in the article is that Logan Couture actually signed his second deal before his
UFA. Or pardon me.
Before his entry level
so
was up.
So really yeah. guys, the
which
the,
is similar to how Tampa Bay Devil Rays didn't Rays, not Devil Rays.
And Richie, setting aside the possibility of him yeah. being traded, which to be honest with you is realistic.
I think so.
At this point, it's going to be a question of 2 to 4 years, and there's benefits
yes.
for the team, there's benefits for the player and his agent to seek a longer term deal, but also a shorter term deal.
And there's a risk inherent in both of those, a short and a long term deal.
Yep.
The risk of injury in the short term deal, the risk of outperforming your contract in the long term deal and not getting more value. And we talked about that in the summer with Bogosian. Eric Johnson signed a 2 year deal. Christopher yep. Letang signed a 4 year deal. Maybe the Johnson deal was a good thing for the 2 year deal. Letang is clearly performing above the money he's being paid. But what you can see in now we have something to base it on.
Yep.
In the summer, they said the team signed Bogosian and Wheeler to 2 year deals. So they're not averse to that kind of a contract.
And we're not privy to the negotiations, but when we talked about Andrew Ladd, and it was a no-brainer. You get your captain signed for 5 years. We knew that was going to come, and it was a great deal. And then we've got Blake Wheeler and Zach Bogosian, who
right.
both signed 2 year deals. And we're not privy to the negotiations, but it's quite possible that either the Jets or the agent were looking for a longer term deal,
yes.
specifically with Bogosian. And when you look at Bogosian's potential, but when you look at Couture, Neal, and then Evander Kane coming up. And the fact that you can still have more flexibility with your arbitration rights, that might become the norm. And I think that these long-term contracts, especially when the CBA is coming up and they're going to try
yes,
to
also a good
they're
going
to try to limit these terms, because I mean, love Mike Richards, Kenora boy, and I've always been a Jeff Carter fan, even though he's run into injury troubles this year with Columbus. Those contracts, throw in the Brizgalov too. I mean, all those are all Flyer, those are all Paul Holmgren contracts.
Somebody was drinking for the Brizgalov contract, but it might have been Ed Snyder. But why don't we finish off the last five?
Exactly. Let's talk, if the Jets or, I mean, this could apply, if the Jets trade him, these numbers really apply for any team.
That's absolutely right. This is not just Jets and them. This is just the numbers from an objective point from taking both sides into account.
If the Jets trade him tomorrow, these would still be the same sort of contract starting points.
Evander Kane is not, from any team, is not getting $5 million next
year. Shouldn't. He might, but he shouldn't. I mean, it'd be shocking. So take it on a four-year deal. So the Jets or whomever buy out all of his remaining RFA years. Yeah. So after the end of the contract, he's an unrestricted free agent. He gets signed to a four-year contract this offseason. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. How does that factor into these numbers?
That, I put him at a four-year, $16.3 million deal, which is a 4.075 cap hit per season.
Right.
So what it does is the salary steadily rises with his, you know, into his prime years. You're giving him you're discounting the first year, you know, with no arbitration rights, and you're slowly escalating. You're keeping control of him, essentially, as the system was designed to do. And but you're also paying him, fair market value.
Assuming that he continues to... Well, I mean, if he's a 40-goal scorer at the end of those 4 years, is $4 million a year...
That's the whole idea. I mean, you get value in it.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, he doesn't necessarily care if he's making 5.3 in the last year of the contract. He doesn't care if the cap hits lower.
Well, and if you look
obviously not. Year, you're right. He's making 5.3 million, but it's a lower cap.
4.8 million last year.
And the reason why it's equitable as well is by year three, I mean, on Winnipeg this year, the highest paid player is Dustin Byfuglien.
Right.
By year three, let's assume that Dustin Byfuglien is still the highest paid guy. He's the second highest paid guy. So that's why the contract works. You're going up almost $3 million from year one to year four.
Right,
so it makes sense.
So there you have it. Evander
the whole
Kane,
article makes sense.
Evander Kane, if he's on the free agent,
good job, Richie.
As a restricted free agent, this is what Richie figured: 2 years, $3.05 million per year cap hit; 3 years, a $3.65 million cap hit; and 4 years, $4.075 million cap hit.
Drew, you know what? Chevy should just take Richie's two-part article and take that into negotiations.
I'm sure he's considering doing just
better things to do.
Yeah, I would hope so. Let's leave it there. Let's go to break. When we come back, Alex Steen from the St. Louis Blues is supposed to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Waiting for Alex Steen to give us a call. I think he's actually calling in right now, so we'll get to that momentarily. Alex Steen, of course, of the St. Louis Blues.
Yep.
Winnipegger.
Son of Thomas Steen.
Yes, exactly.
St. Louis Blues lighting the NHL on fire right now.
Exactly right. So, I mean, he's back in town in support of the Amadeus Steen Foundation. So we thought, who better to talk about the St. Louis Blues with than a player for the team?
Great story this year with Hitch getting on board there, and now they're in a good playoff position.
Precisely.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the St. Louis Blues, Alex Steen. Alex, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
No, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. You're back in town in support of the Amadeus Steen Foundation. We'll get to that a little bit later on. We wanted to talk about the incredible turnaround that your team has had really since Davis Payne was let go and Ken Hitchcock came aboard. You know, is that really what you can point to as being the difference? You know, what brought you guys together to have the performance you've had on the ice?
I think it was a big wake-up call for the rest of the group. I think we've been a team that's been on the verge of being a really, really good NHL hockey team. And for the last couple of years, we've been a little thin, gotten into some injury trouble. And, you know, after the injury trouble, we just haven't found our way, really. And I think coming into this year, we added a lot of depth and experience and guys that have won, and that's definitely helped shift our mentality a little bit in the dressing room. So I think it was really, really close. And then when Hitch came in, it was kind of guys, we got something special here. We got a really good team, and right now we're just not playing up to par. So we found a little more consistent game and started playing with a little more determination. And I think, you know, obviously our goaltending's been a huge part of it as well. Both goalies has just been phenomenal for us this year. So it's been a lot of fun coming to the rink. And, you know, right now we're enjoying our time in St. Louis. We've set up ourselves for a good second half of the season. And And now we've just got to go out and play even better in the second half.
You know, Alex, we everyone knows that Ken Hitchcock's a great coach. He won a Stanley Cup in 99 with the Dallas Stars and then went to Philadelphia. Now he's obviously the coach of the Blues. And, you know, we hear a lot about how good of a coach he is. But, you know, we have you on, and it's different hearing it from a player. What's it like to play under Ken Hitchcock, and what about him specifically does he bring, maybe as far as an approach to the game or a system that makes him such a successful coach?
Well, I think he's extremely experienced. He's got a cup, so he's been there. He knows what it takes. You know, he's extremely prepared. I think the biggest thing that kind of caught me off guard from the beginning was that he's got a great sense of humor too. He's fun to be around, and the guys really appreciate that. I think he's very good at being stern and hard on the guys when we need it, and you know, really keeps it loose and fun when he feels that's time for that as well. So he's good at reading the team. He's confident in his approach to the game, and he does a good job of preparing us for each and every game.
Alex, you know, the team, you guys got a young squad there, but a couple of veterans were brought in this summer. Jason Arnott and Jamie Langenbrenner played together before and also won cups. Have they changed the chemistry or the feeling in the dressing room at all?
Yeah. I mean, it's Langs and Arnie are, you know, been there and won, and they were great signings. I think last year we were a little young. We didn't really have that experience and had, as a result, a little of an up-and-down game throughout the course of the season. But these guys came in and been great in the room. I think a guy that hasn't gotten as much recognition after the signings that's been a terrific addition both on and off the ice is Scotty Nickel. Face-off guy, hard-working, scrappy, will fight anybody, it seems like. But in the room is a solid leader for us, and it's kind of been a motor for us as well. So all three of those guys, Husky came in, Ken Huskins came in too. He got hurt pretty early, but he was a great addition. And then obviously Brian Elliott, who's gone to the All-Star game and represented us there, was, you know, we were so happy for him because he's been playing outstanding this year. So it's all the additions we made has been terrific, and you know, it's a really tight knit group. We have a lot of fun.
Last year, right before the trade deadline, your team made a blockbuster deal, shocked many people. You know, consisting of Eric Johnson and coming back, you had Kevin Shattenkirk and Chris Stewart. Can you talk maybe about how, maybe I'm assuming little you knew about Kevin Shattenkirk and how good he actually is?
Yeah, I didn't know much at all. You know, it was his first year when he got traded, but yeah, it was definitely a deal that kind of took us by surprise. But these guys come in, both Shatty and Stu, but Shatty's got great vision, he's hockey sense, great passer, and you know, he's been playing really well for us. He does a great job on the PP, and you know, Stu's been a big body in front. He's been working hard, he fights, he checks hard. It's kind of been the identity of the team now is the way Stu and Backus and Sabatka and Oshie and how everybody kind of plays the same type of game, hardworking, checking, and but also with some skill.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Alex Steen of the St. Louis Blues. Alex, health update. I mean, you were placed on the IR at the beginning of January. How are you feeling? You know, any sort of timetable? What's you know, how are the symptoms right now?
Yeah, there's no real timetable. It's, you know, now we got the All-Star break, so it's been a few days of rest and healing. But yeah, it'll be fun to get back to St. Louis and get back with the guys and see where I'm at. But yeah, it's been a frustrating thing. It's different. It's something that I've never gone through before. Usually with injuries, with broken bones and things like that, you're able to push through it at a point where it's pretty much healed. But with this, it's almost been the opposite. It's, you got to take a step back when you're not feeling right, and it just doesn't come naturally to do that. But you know, it's, doctors have done a great job. The organization's been really supportive and helpful, and you know, I'm hoping to be back soon. But you know, it's something that everybody's being really cautious about.
Alex, when you're getting, you know, sometimes you're not sure how you're feeling, do you bounce some of these, you know, bounce your feelings and how you're progressing, maybe with somebody like David Perron, who went through it, a fairly severe concussion, and can maybe be a little bit of a sounding board for you?
Yeah, the guys I've really spoken to is Paul Correa has been a big help. He's out in California, and he he called me right away when it happened, and or when he found out, and you know, I've been talking to him. He's been giving me a lot of helps and or tips and help with ways to try to speed up recovery and things that he's learned over the years. That's been a huge help, and other guys like Andy McDonald, who's in St. Louis, and I see him on a regular basis, has been a big help as well. So the guys, there's a big support system there that have been helping me along the way.
Alex, everybody here in Winnipeg knows that your dad is Thomas Steen. Obviously, his number was retired by the Winnipeg Jets. I remember running into Thomas Steen around River Heights, asking him for his autograph, and he was always the best guy. What's it like for you, you know, and I imagine you've heard this question before, what's it like growing up, you know, your entire life in Winnipeg, going to the NHL, and then being able to next month come back here as a member of the St. Louis Blues and, you know, play in front of the Jets, you know, and your family?
It's going to be really special. It's, you know, when I found out the team was moving here, I was just waiting for the schedule to see, because I knew they were going to be playing in the East, and that's the way the schedule is set up. I didn't know if we were going to play them home and home or just one game, and if it was the one game, I was hoping it would be here because of the atmosphere and the excitement that's around the team this first year. And I talk to my friends here in Winnipeg on a regular basis on what's going on and how they're doing, and it's just they're just ecstatic about the atmosphere in the building. So it's going to be a very special thing coming back and playing in front of friends and family.
Alex, before we let you go, we have you on today courtesy of the Amadeus Steen Foundation. I'm sure people in the city are sort of familiar with it, but do you have any sort of information? You know, what does who does it support? What sort of events do you guys run? How can people help out the Amadeus Steen Foundation if they're interested in doing so?
Yeah, it's a charity for kids and youth, and you can find more information on www.amadeusteenfoundation.com. We got a few fun events coming up here. One in February, they're the day before that game against us. Bobby Hull's coming in for a book signing. Awesome. It's $50 for a book, and he'll sign it for you. And he's doing that in Winnipeg Square around lunchtime. And then later on in the evening, 5:30 to 7:30, he'll be at Canada Inns and Pull Apart doing the same thing. So that's coming up in February. Then we have our annual golf tournament and fishing trip in the summer in July. Second week of July there, and that's always a fun experience. We have a lot of fun with that and everything that comes with it. So we got a lot of exciting stuff coming in here, and you know, if you want to get updated or donate to the foundation, the website's AmadeusSteenFoundation.com.
That's terrific. We'll be sure to send that out on our Twitter as well. Alex Steen from the St. Louis Blues, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Alex. Take care. Yeah, get well. Exactly.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we begin evaluating each and every Winnipeg Jet and their trade deadline value. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Insight, analysis, and opinions on all things hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Hello, ladies.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed breakfast,
keep it going, Timmy.
In case you missed breakfast with the best this morning, they had a lengthy interview with former WWF star Val Venus.
Hello, ladies.
And so Ezzy, for some reason, is now only wearing a towel, which is just odd. And I mean,
keep
so,
it going,
no,
Timmy.
We like it. It's a good mood.
Let's listen to it first.
I only want to hear Drew talking with this background music.
I have to promo some of our sponsors now. So can you maybe turn it down a little bit? Thank you very much. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done. Let's, for the next really almost 45 minutes or maybe even an hour, we're going to go player by player on the Winnipeg Jets. And we're going to evaluate what they're worth in the upcoming trade market. The trade deadline is, I believe it's, what's today? It's today the 28th? It's less than 1 month. It was 1 month yesterday, the trade deadline.
Yep.
Monday, February 27th is the trade deadline. So the Winnipeg Jets, by my estimation, I would think you would agree with me, Richie, and Ezzy, I'm not even sure what you would agree with anymore, should be sellers at the trade deadline as opposed to anything else.
Well, it's funny because the term buyers and sellers, Drew, is I think, a little bit flawed in the first place. When you're Richie, wouldn't you agree that in this day and age of you know, constantly, you know, trying to manage your team, you're not really, it's not as black and white as buyer seller. As far as I'm concerned, you can be selling something, but you're still buying something.
Yeah, I mean, I understand
in terms of that. But I
think
mean,
what sellers means, a seller means you're selling an established player for younger draft picks.
That's exactly
right.
The context.
Okay, in that
I
sense,
mean, you're not selling without getting anything in return. You're just selling for
right.
You're selling the present for the future. How about that?
And as well, if the Jets aren't in a playoff position, usually that those teams that are not in a playoff position are also considered sellers. So in that sense, I think they could be sellers. But I've said this, I said this last week, I believe, and I think I've said this for almost a month now. I still don't think that the Jets are going to make a lot of moves. And for everyone out there who's looking at the trade deadline and thinking, you know, the Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to trade 5 or 6 players, I think they're going to be disappointed. That's my personal opinion. I think there's a few players, and we're going to go over all of them right up and down the roster. And I think that you could make an argument that 5, 6, 7 players you know, could be traded and might be moved at the trade deadline. But as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of guys on 1-year contracts that aren't going to be re-signed anyways. So I don't.
That's
think,
why you trade them.
I don't think they're going to be moved. Well, you're going to lose them and because you're not going to get that much in return. So I that's my personal opinion, and you guys could argue with it. But I think that people that expect 5 or 6 players to be moved, I think they're going to be disappointed.
Let's start. Where do you want to start? The forwards or on the back end with the defense?
Start on the defense.
Okay, the defense is sort of is probably the more interesting of the two groups because there's more established talent on the defense on the defensive side, and there's more organizational depth on the defensive side.
Yep.
I mean, you have both Paul Postma and Zach Redmond who are in the minors, mm-hmm. Both with tremendous offensive upside, and both who are playing in the AHL All-Star game.
Yep.
So those are guys you would expect to see.
You threw Kolda in there.
Yeah, sorry, Kolda too. Yeah.
Kolda passed through waivers, so I mean...
Yeah, he doesn't have that much, exactly. If Kolda, somebody could have had Kolda for free.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have as much value as Postma or as Redmond.
Right.
So, I mean, those would be the guys you would expect to see up with the NHL club in the next year or so.
I think for Postma, Drew, quickly, I think what they see him as an upside guy is kind of like a Cody Franz, an upside guy.
Yep.
Sure.
5'6" guy, you can play on your power play, and you know he's not the best skater, not the best defensively, but that's the kind of upside I think they see for him.
Well, and which is, I mean, it's reasonable.
Valuable.
He's
some
an offensive
value there.
Defenseman, exactly.
Yes.
Let's start with Mark Flood.
Okay.
I mean, Mark Flood. You know, I'm just going to
on a 1-year contract.
On a 1-year contract, he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. Very
might be the biggest, one of the biggest values in the league at $525,000.
Well, I mean, he's well.
How
he's
can
well
you not be at that contract? It's the minimum.
Yeah, I mean, it's a minimum.
He's
so
well thought of in the organization, certainly.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, but he's a 6'7" defenseman. I don't think he's going to have a market for. I think that probably they will sign him at the end of the year. I don't see much else.
He was the captain of the St. John's Ice Caps.
Yeah, I don't see any team adding him for defensive depth, really.
No,
I mean they probably have something that's comparable in their system. And if they, and to be honest, if you're a top team, you probably want something a little bit better than that as your seventh defenseman.
That's fair. I mean,
look at the Canucks last year going all the way to the Cup. They had to use like 9 or 10 defensemen. I forget how many it was.
That's right. And he wasn't one of them, and he was available to them.
But saying like he wouldn't, you know, they needed guys.
Yeah, and they called up.
And I like Mark Flood.
And they went with Chris Tanev and other guys like that before
I
Mark
like
Flood.
Could they have called him up last year, Mark Flood?
Very briefly, if they
I'm
did.
Just in terms of NHL top 6 defensemen, I mean, you're probably not going to want to rely on him. He can sometimes ably fill the role, sometimes he can't. I see for him and Randy Jones wouldn't net anything more than a 7th-round pick.
Yeah.
Okay? He's a shot blocker. He's a tough guy. He's not the best skater. Not very good offensively. He is fit the 7th, quote-unquote, role more. I kind of like Flood a little better. But even so...
And that's the reason why Flood isn't in the lineup right now, because Randy Jones is on a 1-year contract, and they've been dressing him and scratching Flood.
So I think Jones is somebody who net you like a 7th-round pick. If you're not going to re-sign him, 7th-round is better than no round.
That's right. And that's what you would expect. He could even be a waiver guy or something come on the trade deadline.
And if you look
a lot of waiver moves always on the trade deadline. There.
Right, and you know, something that just pops into my mind, a team like Chicago, who's got Steve Monador and Sean O'Donnell on their last pairing, might want a guy like Randy Jones. So you might get a team like Chicago, a Western Conference team that needs a depth defenseman, San Jose, something like that.
And Chicago wants a top 4 guy, too.
That's right.
They're not happy with Nick Leddy.
Randy Jones is not a top 4 guy, but he, you're right. And that's when some of the other names... some of the other guys that are on the trade market, but the Jets right now, I mean...
If you can get anything more than the seventh round pick for Randy Jones, you take it, and you probably take a seventh round pick also.
That's well, right. the thing with the Jets right now, and this is my opinion, Richie, and I know we're going to go through these players, sure. But after this year, you've got Mark Stewart under contract for 2 more years, mm-hmm. Buff's under contract for 4 more, Enstrom 1 more, and then he becomes UFA. That's a key guy.
Yeah, Enstrom's an interesting one. We're going to discuss in length in a second.
The guys, in my opinion, who are going to form the nucleus in the future, hopefully, I mean, this isn't a guarantee because the Jets are a young team and Bogosian's only under a 2-year contract, but you've got Bufflin, Bogosian, Stewart, and Enstrom. I think they would be happy to have those 4 guys as their, you know, their Lidstrom, Rafalski. I mean, I'm not comparing them, but you know what I mean. Yeah. Teams in this day and age like to have their 4, Philly, Chicago, all those teams.
Well, you know, you add an element of like offense with Bufflin, offense with Enstrom, defense with Bogosian, with Stewart.
Those are the 4 guys I think that you would have to consider as the core of their defense.
And ideally, you want Stewart to be a 5-6 guy, but that kind of group, you have a mix of talent, defense, shot blocking with Stewart. I agree. Yep. I think you're right. That mix is kind of what you're looking for.
And then next year, they're, and this is why on defense, this is where I think the movement's going to be. I think when you have the Oduya contract, and that's the guy that I think is the most likely guy to be traded.
Yes,
and then Hainsey, even though he's under contract for another year, you know, it's going to be tough to re-sign him after next year when he's making that type of money, unless he's willing to take a significant cut.
Now, one thing to note about Hainsey, as I mentioned on the show before, is his cap hit this year is 4.5. His actual salary is 5. But next year's cap hit's 4.5, because it's always the same.
Right.
And his actual salary is 3.
Right. So, and when Richie,
let's talk about Ron Hainsey. Ron Hainsey, under contract this year, under contract next year, then an unrestricted free agent.
Yes.
Admittedly overpaid, no fault of his own.
Nope.
What is Ron Hainsey, what does he bring to the table, and what could he be worth on February 27th?
It's a very interesting question, Drew. I mean, he's a good skater. He's got good puck skills, not the strongest in his own end. He does have lapses of judgment. He's not the strongest on the boards. But guys who can move the puck, who can skate well, who can play power play, play some penalty kill, play even strength, those guys don't grow on trees. And
also, it's worth noting, sorry for interrupting, but it's worth noting that there's always trends in the NHL, and the trend nowadays is defensive depth more than anything else almost.
Yep.
And so a team like Chicago, for example, we talked about before, right?
Yep.
I mean, you have your top four of Keith and Seabrook and Chalmerson. They're not that happy with Nick Leddy, a guy who they've, you know, they got rid of Campbell, they hope
he's really
up.
Young and he's had some success, but lately he's struggled big time. You're right.
And what they did last, what happened with Leddy last year is they put him into a role. They split up Keith and Seabrook for the majority of that Vancouver series, and Leddy was exposed quite a bit. I didn't think he played that badly, actually. I thought he
smaller guy
put himself quite well. But yeah, so the problem with Leddy is, you know, he's a good skater, good offensive guy. He hasn't been as solid as they'd like. So they'd ideally want to push him back down to the 5, maybe have him play with Monitor, lefty, righty, 5-6.
Yep.
A guy like Hainsey is probably a little more of a polished Nick Leddy, really. But a guy like that fits in to your top four, you can deal with it. And it gives you the depth. And that is the kind of guy that I can see a team like Chicago going for. Now, I mean, what is he, you know, obviously there's cap ramifications, and what is he worth? Well, to me, Johnny Oduya, because let's work him in here too.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Johnny Oduya,
under contract this year for $3.5 million, then an unrestricted free agent next year.
Johnny Oduya moved the puck. You know, obviously it's his drawbacks, but I think that puck skills and the skating ability, I don't think he's a great quote-unquote skater, but he's fast, if that makes sense to people.
His technique isn't solid, but he can move up and down.
And I think what happens there is I think Oduya, being a pending UFA, nets you probably a high 3, low 2.
Right, and the thing with these two guys,
so what does Hainsey net you?
When Bogosian, I'll answer that in a second, or I'll try to, Zach Bogosian... when he was injured and Dustin Bufflin, who was still injured, were out, mm-hmm. I mean, it was clear. And I realized that Johnny Oduya has had his troubles this year. Johnny Oduya was by far the guy who was moving the play the most from the back end. I think nobody will disagree with that. Maybe Toby Enstrom as well. Let's not forget about Enstrom. But Johnny Oduya...
he moved it better than people think.
Can move the puck very well. But, you know, the problem with Oduya has always been... once again, you know, he does cough up the free pizzas, as Claude Noel would like to say. And, you know, as far as scoring goals, I think he only has 2 this year. He's not much of a threat from the point on the power play, for instance. But I think, you know, to answer your question and to get back to that, I think Johnny Oduya is the most marketable along with Hainsey, I think a team like when you're looking at
if you take Hainsey, you're at least getting another. You're getting another year out of him.
That's right.
You're getting a year out of him at a high cap hit, but a low salary. So if you have some room, you can swallow that.
Yes, absolutely.
With Oduya, I mean, you're not going to trade. You shouldn't trade. I mean, if I'm a general manager and you're trading a guy for a rental, you just can't trade. You shouldn't be trading as much for a guy who's a rental as a guy who's under contract for another year.
And if he's
going
to be a rental, back to what Richie said, if a team like Chicago is getting Oduya for a rental and they know that he's a UFA next year, it's going to be tough to get a second rounder out of that.
Well, that's the thing. I'm saying a high second, low second, or high third.
Yeah.
I think likely a third. You might be able to squeeze a second. Maybe you toss one other thing in there and then you get it to a second. And that'd be good value for a guy who you're not going to re-sign at the end of the summer, so at the end of the season. So I think that's these guys need to be traded because, especially Oduya, any pending UFA. I mean, Slater and Glass are also UFAs. We'll talk with them next segment.
Yep. Yeah. Not next segment, but when we get to the forwards.
Sorry, when we get to the forwards. But I think that, we'll talk about Enstrom next segment. But I think about, I think different situations. Oduya on a team that is deep, pretty deep in offense, in offensive defensemen and deep in defensemen in general, you deal him out, you're not going to re-sign him, you get something for him. Hainsey, you have the luxury of not giving him away for nothing because you have him next year.
And
The market will, I think, Ezzy, be stronger for Gallic Hainsey because they can get him for next year.
Yep.
I think you could get a legitimate prospect for him.
I think both of those guys are going to get, Chevy's going to get a lot of calls for Oduya and Hainsey.
Yeah, defensemen don't grow on trees, and puck moving defensemen, which these guys both are, don't grow on trees.
And they're not,
make the first pass. You hear about making a strong first pass all the time.
Both these guys are in their early 30s. It's not like, this is one of their last years here. They're both in their early 30s. Right now, Chicago's playing a 41-year-old Sean O'Donnell. So you can't tell me the team like Chicago isn't, Stan Bowman isn't going to pick up the phone.
Especially
what he needs for Oduya.
Chicago has a lot of connection to the Winnipeg with Chevy. Yep. There's a relationship there, and these guys do like making deals with guys they know.
Yep.
I mean, you see it time and time again. Certain teams match up well because
Vancouver's another team that True North has a relationship with.
True, also look at Minnesota, San Jose.
Yeah, exactly. They seem to make trades every hour with one another. Let's leave it there. Let's go to break. When we come back, the most interesting of all the cases, I believe, Tobias Enstrom. Should he be on the market? Is he on the market? What could the market hold for him? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.